Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Thursday, August 17th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Nonprofit Day.
It's
also National Thrift Store Day. So get ready for some bargain shopping. There's not much time left since most of them probably close at 4 or 5. Hey, nearly every town in the U.S. offers a thrift shop or secondhand store, so I guess there's no excuse not to celebrate. Typically, churches, other charitable organizations run thrift shops to raise money for their stated purpose, and groups like the Red Cross and others also use some of the items to help others, like those in Lahaina, Hawaii, get back on their feet after a disaster or when times have been difficult. So head out to your local thrift store today and support your neighbors and other fellow Americans in need.
There you go. There you go. Well, let's go ahead and get to the markets and some pressure on gold today. We did break down, you know, and it's funny if you look at the, we'll have to talk about the gold COMEX. We're still showing 19.19 for gold, down $9 today, 19.19 for gold. And the silver COMEX, we're looking at it being higher at 22.73. And the rest of the markets, you have platinum up $10 at $904, and palladium was up 11 at 1,250. The USDX today was weaker, just a little 0.03 at 103.41. Crude oil had a reversal. It was up much higher, and now we're looking at 80.08, up 70 cents. Paper markets today, well, the Dow tumbled nearly 300 points. This is the third straight day, and 290 at 34,474. The NASDAQ dropped 157 points, and the S&P dropped 34 points. Asian markets today, they were all negative. However, China was a little bit stronger, not by much, a couple points. European markets, they were all negative. Still all under 1%, basically. 10-year yield, 4.28. This is the highest level since October of 2022, 4.28. And we have natural gas is up 1.16% at 2.62. So, you know, again, we 10-year Treasury reached its highest points on October 22nd. Walmart declined more than 2%. Cisco Systems gained 4%. So they're just all over the page. We'll talk about jobless claims here in a little bit. But I just don't think anybody really knows where they want to be. And so it's going to be kind of a pretty exciting fall, I believe, once we get through August. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit, Dave, about the what's going to happen when the pandemic savings, they're going to poof out soon. I know they say this, but I just can't believe that there is excess savings that households built up during the pandemic. I mean, that was 3 years ago, and you got households living paycheck to paycheck, and the amount of credit is, you know, over, what, a trillion? You know, so I find it hard to believe that people are just now beginning to run out of the paltry money that they received for the pandemic. Although there's a lot of other programs that, you know, really we talk about the cash programs a lot, but I guess there's other ones, Dave. And but I guess according to the San Francisco Fed and what economists fear is key support for consumer spending that have boosted this somewhat cool economy this year. Households held less than $190 billion of aggregate excess savings by June. There is considerable uncertainty in the outlook, they added, but we estimate that these excess savings are likely to be depleted during the third quarter. Now, is that $190 billion what they're talking about as far as pandemic savings?
No, just what's left over. Just what's left. I mean, they had been well over $2 trillion at the peak of the pandemic, August 2021.
2021, yeah.
Yeah.
How do they know what's on the household balance sheets of... Anyway, I'm just... Yeah,
they use data they get from their... From
the
their,
tracking the people?
Their sires, tracking? Yes.
From tracking us?
Yes.
The Bureau of Economic Analysis recently revised its previous estimates to show that household disposable income was lower and personal consumption was higher than previously reported for the last quarter of 2022. Dave.
Yeah, well, the Bureau's measure, the research shows also that the combined revisions brought that down, the aggregate personal savings, by more than $50 billion. In addition, they say second quarter data indicate that household spending continued to grow at a solid pace, thus propping up GDP. By most accounts, excess savings that were accumulated during the pandemic have helped the economy, they say, defy forecasters' expectations for a hard landing this year, you know, the Fed has raised interest rates by 525 basis points. When was the last Fed meeting? Last week. You know, Fed officials acknowledged the impact while also suggesting that the dynamic could soon fade. It's according to the minutes that were published yesterday of the July meeting. It said tight financial conditions primarily reflecting the cumulative effect of the committee's shift to a restrictive policy stance, were expected to contribute to slower growth in consumption in the period ahead. We'll see where that goes from now. The big question is, will the end of savings to prop up consumer spending cause GDP to go negative the coming quarters, or will consumers continue to prop up the economy with increased credit card spending? Pick your poison, Melody.
Well, I don't know how much credit card spending is left to be done. Isn't there, do they have a number of credit available?
Aggregate credit limit. I don't know. I don't know. Versus I mean, I guess that's possible too.
be interesting to see.
Have to look for that one. I haven't seen that one.
Because right now it's over a trillion.
Yeah, the
credit card debt.
Unpaid, yeah.
So is there what is available that they can continue to prop up the economy by increased credit card spending?
Good question.
Or are they maxed out? I think they're maxed out. If they can't afford a $400 or $1,000 emergency, and they're living paycheck to paycheck, I think a large portion of this country taxpayers are pretty tapped out. But we'll see. We have initial applications for unemployment benefits dropped by 11,000 to 239 for the week ending August 12th. Now, that's down from the 250,000 the previous week. The four-week moving average of claims, which softens some of the week-to-week volatility, rose to 2,700. Jobless claim applications are now seen as a proxy for the number of layoffs in a given week. And, of course, you know, with inflation, we've seen, you know, as you mentioned, the Fed has raised its interest rates and trying to cool the job market and to bring down wages. And but yet all the politicians are out there patting themselves on the back because wages are rising, but yet the Fed is trying to lower them. Oh, what a confusing world people live in anyway. What is the real reality of the world that we live in is the big question. But and we all can remember that the Labor Department reported that employers added 187,000 jobs in July. Dave.
Yeah, it's true. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I've been looking for the answer to the question you asked. Oh. And just couldn't find it.
Well, okay. We can do that during the break.
I guess we can.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Jobless claims.
Oh, well, they fell below, job openings fell below 9.6 million in June. That's the fewest in more than 2 years. However, numbers remain unusually, call it robust, considering that monthly job openings never topped 8 million before 2021. Applications for jobless aid reached a higher level, above 260,000 for a few weeks earlier this year, causing some concern, but then retreated. Outside of a flurry of layoffs in the tech sector, companies have mostly been holding on to workers. As we know, many of them struggled to replenish their workforces after cutting jobs during the pandemic, and much of the ongoing hiring now likely reflects efforts to catch up to consumer demand that has emerged since the pandemic recession. Now, while the manufacturing, warehousing, and retail industries have slowed their hiring recently, they still aren't cutting jobs in any large numbers. Economists say that given the difficulties in finding workers over the past 2 years, businesses will likely hold on to them even if the economy weakens. Overall, about 1.72 million were collecting unemployment benefits the week that ended August 5th. That's about 32,000 more than the previous week.
You know, I read an article earlier this week about how they're calling it a rich session because it's the white collar jobs that are being whacked. And the lower wage job is the lower wages folks. Yeah, they'll hold on to them because they did have a hard time finding replacements and so forth. So it is going to change. But that just means I think it'll be a harder hit on the economy. It will be a harder landing than what they're expecting because of that. But and will they still, as much as they want to, hang on to those employees? I'm not so sure they can when things begin to slow down. So then you're going to have two sectors of the employment, you know, the the blue and the white getting hit. But anyway.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting because now that we have the 10-year up over 4%, and now we have mortgage rates over 7%. I think both times as that has happened, we definitely saw a huge weakening in the paper market. So I think that's kind of what we're experiencing this week. This is it's like they get to this point and things begin to fall apart. So you see the adjustments so that the things come down. But the rate on the 30-year mortgage ticked up to 7.16 this week. This is the highest since last October. And you'd have to go all the way back to 2001 to find mortgage rates this high. And look at this example. With a 7.16 mortgage rate on a $417,000 mortgage loan, the monthly payment would be a little over $2,800. But back in 2021, you would pay that amount, $2,800, on a $670,000 loan. That is the difference that it makes. So, in short, households that would like to move are kind of trapped right now. Axios Felix Salmon says at this point, mortgage rates are so high, they're almost a reason to buy on the grounds they have to come down at some point. And when mortgage rates come down, prices go up. But the too-big-to-fail Goldman Sachs research team is now forecasting that new home prices will rise 1.8% this year. But, you know, previously they predicted a drop of 2.2%, so that just cracks me up. But, you know, is that the best they can do? But I've read, too, Dave, they're going to be seeing 8% interest rates pretty soon.
Hmm.
For mortgage rates. So,
well, I suspect if you have floating rate debt
yeah,
on a home equity loan, line of credit, you're probably already paying 8%, maybe even a little bit more.
Yes, absolutely.
And if you figure, you know, the average bank is going to charge about 3 points over the Fed funds rate, you know, that takes it to 8.25, 8.5. So I wouldn't be surprised if people are beginning to pay that. And those who had, say, 3% or even slightly less loans on their line of credit a couple of years ago and they took it out, if you haven't looked at your statement recently, I would suggest that you do so because you could be in for a big surprise. Mm. But turns out even with mortgage rates hitting new highs, home prices are heading back up again. That's because there aren't that many houses on the market. Inventory continues to be low. Homeowners clinging to their low mortgage rates and don't want or can't afford to move because, hey, they're paying, either they have no mortgage or they're paying, you know, that 2.5 to 3%. It's a, particularly if they're moving up to a bigger house, you know, that hits hard. Melody just mentioned in that example. The inventory of available single-family homes right now for sale nationwide is about 1 million. That's the lowest going back to 1999, according to the National Association of Realtors. Before the pandemic, as a comparison, they're closer to 2 million homes for sale. So anyway.
You know, sometimes I drive through some neighborhoods and I see these young people and so forth. It's like, how do they afford some of these homes? And what it was the interest rates. That's how they could afford them.
Yep.
They probably couldn't afford the same house that they bought in today's world.
No.
So, and when you look at who the buyers are going to be, you have the seniors. Well, they're downsizing. And so, you know, this big move, just like, what were they, the Mac Mansions and so forth?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we didn't have Mac Mansions this time around, but they're certainly bigger homes and higher valued homes that were purchased. So So interesting to see how this market is going to fare out. And I don't think it's going to be such a good outcome. But the outcome that we do have is this break. And we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And folks, we do have a little bit of the 90% silver. We have some at really good prices, the lowest that you'll find anywhere. We don't have a lot of it at those low prices. We have the regular price, 90% silver, but we still got some $50 face value packages of dimes and quarters and some 50-cent pieces. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And I had a guy, I have a feeling it was from one of my competitors because I mentioned this competitor online the other day on the program, comparing prices. And it was just funny that he happened to mention that company's name and on some fractional pieces on 1/10 ounce. And they said they could buy it at $50 over spot, $49.99 or something like that. I don't know. But I went on there and I looked and there's no way they were selling that the price that they were offering was at $49.99 over spot. It was over wholesale prices because I priced mine out and it came out to wholesale. So that was, I don't know, it's not, the price that they're charging is not $50 over wholesale or over spot. So, you know, look around online, folks, and if you can buy them at $50, $50 over spot, $49.99 or whatever it was, I'd be buying a whole bunch of them because that's basically below wholesale. And if you can get them at that price, so they're offering it, so they have to stand by it. It can't be just a typo and not honor that. So, I mean, people do make mistakes, and if it's an honest mistake, then you can, you know, do what you wish. But so be careful out there. Sounds like a really good deal, but when you really work up the numbers, sometimes it just isn't what it's supposed to be. So give us a call if you come across anything like that at 1-800-375-4188. And Dave, your favorite segment, Levity is Golden. And you want to talk a little bit about the world and its TV watching. And it's interesting that for the first time ever, broadcast and cable has fallen below 50% of total U.S. usage, TV usage in the U.S. last month.
It's true. I mean, our culture seems to have been taken over by TV first and later smartphones. And whether you're watching your favorite program on an instrument that's like 3 inches by 7, or you've got a 75-inch wall-mounted smart TV, the way we watch and what we're watching has changed over the years. And as Melody mentioned, the world's changing as we speak. Again, for the first time ever, broadcast and cable has fallen below 50% of total TV usage in the U.S. anyway. Lack of major sporting events took a toll on traditional TV networks last month, which still holds the majority of major sports broadcast rights. One exception, the Women's World Cup, which saw record viewership numbers before the U.S. Women's National Team was eliminated by Sweden. Nielsen's latest viewership report says streaming garnered a record, we'll call it 39% of total TV usage in July, with Amazon Prime Video, Netflix, and YouTube TV hitting all-time highs. Cable TV viewing represented 30% of all viewing. Broadcast again fell to 20%. Other means comprised about 12%. With kids settled into their summer breaks by July, they continued to have an outsized effect on TV usage. While overall TV usage was up just 0.2% from the prior month, viewing among people under the age of 18 increased 4%. That can never be good. Why aren't those kids outdoors? Why aren't they at swimming pools? Why aren't they riding bicycle? Why aren't they just running around in their backyards? Well, at least viewing among adults 18 and older fell, but just 0.3%. Entertainment giants now need to wrestle with what to do with their broadcast and cable TV assets, given the increasing pace of this cord cutting in the U.S. Disney CEO Bob Iger made it clear to investors last week that Disney is seriously rethinking its commitment to the traditional TV biz and is considering selling its major networks, ABC, FX, and National Geographic. And other media firms like Warner Brothers Discovery are committed to their cable networks as a profit driver for now. They say they're also taking steps to bolster their streaming products for the future. Melody, we live in interesting times, and that is this week's brief. Levity is Golden.
Yes, we certainly do. And I mean, the cost of cable and so forth is ridiculous. When you can get the, you know, internet streaming and so forth for pennies. But what usually what happens is people get all these subscriptions and they don't have a clue what they're paying. You know, because they'll see something, and I know it's happened to me. You'll see something you want to watch, so you sign up. Yeah, I'll make an agreement. You know, and then the next, you know, it's $5 or $6 for the first month, you know, whatever. And then you forget about it because you never go back.
My wife, who's much more eagle eye on her bank account than I am, asked me last weekend, she said, Dave, why do we have two monthly payments to Bloomberg News? And it's like, oh, let me check into it. And sure enough, you know, I had one and must have signed up for another. So, you know, pay attention.
And they're expensive, too. I know Bloomberg's expensive. So Financial Times is expensive. And well, we're coming back into that time again where we're going to have this debate about shutdown of government. And yay, shut it down, baby. But we have October 1st. The pitch from congressional leaders acknowledges that the House and Senate are nowhere near an agreement on spending levels to keep federal operations running past the end of the fiscal year, which comes September 30th. McCarthy, the House Speaker, raised the idea of a month's long funding package known as continuing resolution to the House Republicans on a members only call just this week, earlier Monday. On Tuesday, you had Chuck Schumer said the two leaders had spoken about such a temporary measure. It would extend federal funding operations into December to allow more time to work on the annual spending bills. Well, what have they been doing all year? You know, it just cracks me up.
Fighting among themselves and with each other.
Campaigning and, getting money. Fundraising.
It's always an election year.
Yep, always. And so anyway, a stopgap measure would keep government offices running past the end of the fiscal year is a typical strategy. Yeah, either side, blah, blah, blah.
What I find ironic
goes on.
What I find ironic is the use of the term continuing resolution.
Yes.
It's anything but a resolution. I mean, you know, temporary for sure, but it's because they haven't found consensus, on a year-long spending bill like most, like virtually all businesses do, and they don't have to. Here, you know, it's essentially a legal requirement, and Congress just finds ways year after year to find their way around it. You know, we got to do something about campaign finances. Until we do, you know, this dysfunction is, if it's not going to get worse, it's certainly not going to get any better. McCarthy is probably going to have a real hard time getting a chunk of his Republican colleagues to pass the stopgap bill without steep cuts, particularly those wanted by the House Freedom Caucus members, who are really responsible for elevating him to the speakership. I mean, those folks are usually loath to get behind short-term funding measures, and they love the threat of a shutdown as leverage. Well, in any event, foretelling the political dynamics ahead, many on both sides of the aisle are bracing for an eventual shutdown, whether it comes September 30th, December 31st, early next year. Most people, or at least the majority now, think that it's inevitable. We'll see where things go. I mean, we know that both sides had agreed to certain budget levels during the debt ceiling negotiations. And Biden and McCarthy struck a deal that established spending ceilings. But those ceilings are now off. The gamesmanship continues, Melody. When will it all stop?
When they finally default. So anyway, and you know what? This is all part of it, too. When we talk about when we saw some banks fail earlier this year and the largest treasury departments in corporate America, well, they're switching up their banks earlier this year. These companies got complacent when it came to managing their cash and then scrambled to get their finances in order once they were alerted to the risks. and cash management decisions were historically solid within the purview of the corporate treasurers, while the top brass concentrated on, you know, on more strategic issues. So now you have these decisions are increasingly made by the CFO and the CEO, or even at the board level. A treasury expert, Cody Lott, he works for Clearwater Analytics, and this is what he is saying. 50% of corporate treasury departments changed the banks holding their cash and short-term investments after the SVB collapsed, according to the Clearwater survey of 155 treasurers managing more than $500 million. And if you just look at departments holding more than $1 billion, and if you look just at their cash rather than their investments, the percentage goes even higher, Dave.
Yeah, well, remember, just last week, Moody's downgraded 10 banks.
That's right.
Put six more on review for possible downgrades, including too big to fail's New York Mellon and State Street Bank. Such moves obviously are reflecting a broader nervousness about the health of the U.S. banking system. And that's helped precipitate the move by corporate treasurers away from bank accounts and toward ultra-safe treasuries, but also money market funds and highly secured overnight loans, the reverse repos. Nearly all banks lost deposits in the first half of 2023, according to the Fed, not just the large regional banks. Among the too big to fails, total deposits at scandal-prone Wells Fargo fell by almost 3%, while State Street's fell by the most, just shy of 6%. The winners, well, the most copper-bottom banks of all, J.P. Morgan Chase and the Bank of New York Mellon, saw their deposits rise by 2.5% and 4.7%. Now, Morgan's rose probably because they're taking over the assets of the failed Signature Bank. The bottom line, SVB's failure was a wake-up call that genuinely caused a lot of formerly sleeping corporate treasury departments to wake up and smell the coffee.
Well, I thought J.P. Morgan lost deposits.
Well, they did probably, excluding the assets they gained with their taking over Signature. But, you know, you include that.
All right.
So not necessarily an apples to apples comparison.
Yeah. It makes them look good.
Yeah. I'll be talking more about that in the third segment with some pretty chilling statistics, I think.
Okay. The world's wealth is again set to rise substantially. The UBS report shows, the UBS report shows global wealth fell in 2022. Now, this is a conclusion of Swiss Bank's UBS 14th Annual Global Wealth Report. And total wealth actually fell in 2022. And, of course, we saw both the stock and bond markets fall dramatically, and so you would expect that to happen. The world's private wealth ended the year at $454 trillion, down 3%. That's the first annual decline since 2008, Great Recession. Global median wealth, however, which could be a little bit more meaningful, that went up 3% in 2022, it says. For the world as a whole, median wealth has increased fivefold this century, writes the report, largely due to the rapid wealth growth in China. Okay, so it's the China people that are getting wealthy. UBS says the total global wealth is expected to rise by 38% in the next 5 years, with middle-income countries rather than the ultra-rich reaping the majority of the benefits, Dave.
Yeah, well, while these so-called middle-income countries accounted for barely more than 5% of global wealth in 2000, the report says that number is likely to reach 30% by 2027. Low-income countries are likely to see their wealth grow by about 12% a year over the next five, according to UBS, while the middle-income countries will grow at a 10.7% pace. That's wealth now, not GDP. It's far above the 4.5% growth rate projected for high-income countries like the U.S. Now, the U.S. was part of 2022's global trend of the rich getting poorer and the poor getting richer. While baby boomers and Gen Xers saw their wealth decline last year, millennials got richer. And we're going to be richer, too, because of these upcoming important messages. We hope you'll stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We'll be right back.
Slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Bethann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Bethann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client businesses, final segment. You know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, the U.S. dollar saw an 8% decline in its share of global reserves last year, causing some to question whether the dollar's day of dominance are over. We've been talking about this off and on. Treasury Secretary Yellen gave her 2 cents on the matter during a recent congressional hearing, stating that no currency anywhere currently exists that could displace the rugged greenback. U.S. sanctions and other foreign policy plays have inspired a backlash from China, Russia, and other prominent countries who may be keen to dethrone the dollar. Yet Yellen remains adamant that it will not be easy for any country to devise a way to get around it. She did, however, warn that the dollar share of global reserves may continue to decline as countries look to diversify. Well, here's why the topic of de-dollarization is front and center these days, and a little about what you can do if you're worried about the strength of the dollar. The dollar's dominance in global trade and capital flows back to at least 80 years, not just because the U.S. is the world's largest economy, but also because oil and other essential commodities are priced in the dollar. However, you have recent events, the Fed's aggressive rate hikes, the trade war with China, U.S. sanctions enforced after Putin's invasion of Ukraine, all of them have caused more countries to call for trade to be carried out in currencies other than the dollar. Prominent powerhouses India and the UAE have officially started trading with each other in their local currencies. The Indian government announced on Monday that the country's leading petroleum refiner, Indian Oil Corp, used the local rupee to buy 1 million barrels of oil from the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company instead of the dollar. At the 14th BRICS summit last year, Putin announced measures to create a new international currency standard, to use his words, yet that has yet to materialize. Meanwhile, China's been urging oil producers and major exporters to adopt its yuan for payments. And major oil exporter Saudi Arabia has said it's open to the idea of trading in other currencies. Even longtime allies like France have made the non-dollar transactions since the U.S. ramped up its sanctions. In April, French President Emmanuel Macron said Europe must reduce its dependence on the dollar in order to keep its, quote, strategic autonomy, unquote, and avoid becoming subordinate to America. When quizzed on the impact of these trends by the House Financial Services Committee, Yellen admitted that U.S. sanctions have motivated some countries to seek out currency alternatives, but she was adamant that the dollar will remain dominant. She said the dollar plays the role it does in the world financial system for very good reasons that no other country is able to replicate, including China. She continued, "We have deep, liquid, open financial markets, strong rule of law, and an absence of capital controls that no country is able to replicate." When asked if the dollar's international status is declining, Yellen said she does see virtually no meaningful workaround for most countries for using the dollar as a reserve currency, but that we should expect over time a gradually increased share of other assets in reserve holdings of countries, a natural desire to diversify. But the dollar is far and away the dominant reserve asset. I think I hear a screen door opening. I do. According to the data from the IMF's currency composition of foreign exchange reserves, the U.S. dollar accounted for 58% of global foreign exchange reserves in the fourth quarter last year. In second place was the euro, accounting for about 20% of reserves. The Chinese yuan, which some think is the biggest threat to the dollar, accounted for just 2.7%. of reserves during the same period, and nearly a third of that's held by Russia. While de-dollarization efforts are clearly underway, most financial commentators share Yellen's view that the dollar will hold on to its throne. Solutions said it doesn't expect a paradigm shift anytime soon, given that there's no feasible alternative to the dollar for international trade. Whether the dollar is replaceable or not, you may be worried about how economic volatility, high inflation, and stock market uncertainty could be impacting your own dollars, especially your retirement fund. Why not look to central banks for the inspiration? In the past year, we've talked about central banks across the world have been ditching their dollar reserves in favor of, yes, gold. The first quarter of this year, banks added over 228 tons of gold, new quarterly record, to their reserves. According to the World Gold Council, gold's a great alternative because unlike the dollar, which has lost 98% of its purchasing power since 1971, Gold's purchasing power remains stable over time. You can get a piece of this gold in action by opening a precious metals IRA. It's a type of individual retirement account that allows you to invest in gold and silver and other precious metals in physical form, like coins, instead of stocks, mutual funds, and other traditional investments. Opting for a precious metals IRA gives you the opportunity to both diversify your portfolio and stabilize your finances, and gold tends to yield less risk and volatility than other alternative investments. If you'd like more information about how to open a precious metals IRA, call Melody at Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Interestingly, don't kill the messenger on this one. Janet Yellen, again, her Treasury Department's announced that billions of dollars slated for investments in clean energy, electric vehicles, and batteries under the Inflation Reduction Act, that's another IRA, will go to relatively underserved communities throughout the country. The announcement comes as the Biden administration's landmark law targeting manufacturing, infrastructure, and climate turns 1 year old. More than $500 billion in announced investments, $200 billion of which is in the clean energy sector, is a key component of the legislation, according to the Treasury. The senior Treasury official yesterday noted that the agency is also seeing a meaningful private investment in the effort, saying the indicators rebut old notions that private investment suffers when large public initiatives go into effect. A new Treasury report attributed the projected outcomes to modern supply-side economics. That's Yellen's term to describe policies that prioritize economic growth along with things like climate or inequality. Now, concrete data on the true effectiveness of IRA investments won't be available for several years, but available public figures show that companies plan to take advantage of bonuses in the law to invest in disadvantaged communities. The reports cite data on the Biden administration's invest.gov website that shows nearly 90% of the announced clean technology investments are in counties with below average weekly wages. Over 80% are also in counties with lower than average college graduation rates, and 65% are in counties with above average overall poverty rates. And an equal percentage are in counties where a lower than normal share of the population is employed, all according to the report. Now, the Treasury Department also found that the CHIPS and Science Act, that's the second arm of the Biden economic agenda to bolster semiconductor manufacturing here in the U.S., is a, quote, important contributor to the building of manufacturing facilities. Construction, according to the report, more than doubled since 2021, as of June this year, especially in the tech sector. Though early reporting suggests the Biden administration policies could support long-term economic growth, some Republican lawmakers panned the IRA's touted benefits on its first anniversary. One of them, Representative Jason Smith, who chairs the House Ways and Means Committee and is an open critic of the legislation, said the IRA is a, quote, massive transfer of tax dollars from the working class to the wealthy, big banks, and large corporations. He also contends the IRA would benefit the Chinese Communist Party as the U.S. continues to rely on Chinese imports for clean energy technology. Well, it will take some time to see what happens in this context. In the meantime, Treasury sold another $150 billion in Treasury bonds this afternoon to fund the government's spiraling deficit spending. Hey, internal grumblings about Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon are spilling out into a chain of reports prompting speculation over his future. Solomon, who's coming up on 5 years at the helm at Goldman, is overseeing the company's biggest overhaul since the Great Recession. And while his strategy reportedly has the support of his board, some of his decisions, including the issuance of smaller paychecks and bonuses, have upset others within the firm. Bloomberg reporters wrote in a piece yesterday, dissent has become an alarmingly frequent occurrence. And a New York Magazine report on Friday cited people portraying Solomon as someone easy to dislike. And according to the New York Times story from also from Friday, senior Goldman partners have expressed frustration with the bank's performance. But the bottom line is that Goldman stock is actually up more than 60% since Solomon took over. And while the company's foray into consumer banking may have been a debacle, the bank's still the envy of its peers. And that's according to its too-big-to-fail rival, Wells Fargo. One of their analysts said, when I talk to investors, investors aren't saying get rid of David Solomon. What they're really asking is, does the media impact Goldman's performance? And I'd say no so far. Goldman spokesperson Tony Fratto added, the leadership team is focused on executing our strategy and the performance of the business, not on speculation. Recent Financial Times piece observed, Goldman Sachs partners that are complaining are famously well paid and infamous for their sharp elbows, both internally and externally. Meanwhile, the CEO of five-time felon J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, continues at the helm of the largest U.S. bank. The fact that federal banking regulators, much less Dimon's board of directors, haven't forced his exit from the company and industry after the bank's latest deferred prosecution agreement involving Chase traders manipulating the gold and silver markets is bad enough. Now Dimon has the daunting challenge to convince a jury that he didn't know that convicted child trafficker Jeffrey Epstein was financing his operation out of J.P. Morgan Chase. As Pam and Russ Martins wrote in a recent Wall Street on Parade newsletter, the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act in 1999 by the Clinton administration, quote, was a watershed moment in its impact on all of the following in America. One, national security. Two, the safety and soundness of the banking system. Three, the ability of Americans to believe in their government to act honestly and fairly. Four, the rise of the billionaire class, and five, with it, the greatest wealth inequality in U.S. history. Think about that for a minute. As a result of Glass-Steagall's ill-advised repeal, and it was passed when? Back in, I forget, the 1930s? J.P. Morgan and other trading casinos on Wall Street are allowed to own federally insured commercial banks and hold trillions, and I mean trillions of dollars of risky derivatives inside those banks. When Glass-Steagall was on the books, they weren't allowed to do that, and rightly so. But with progress comes turmoil. Is it any wonder that only 26% of Americans have any trust left in today's banking industry? I'll leave you with that question. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow, I believe, with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our American Survival newsletter in your email inboxes tomorrow morning, coming out Friday this week, only because of a variety of scheduling conflicts. Sorry to those who've been asking about it. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. That's too bad.